Brandon Fitz, ESPN 102.5, the game. Predators at the Blackhawks coming up tomorrow night. Of course, all the coverage right here on ESPN 102.5, the game. Still have never come up with a good nickname for the Blackhawks. We'll do that. Chase McCabe hanging out, by the way, filling in for Yason Fitz here for a few minutes. We appreciate that, obviously. We'll talk with Jordan Rogers from SEC Network coming up in just a few minutes. You'll hear from Ryan Johansson a little bit later on this hour, maybe even a double super secret probation guest in just a second as well. But Rafael Esparza from MyBookie.net joining us here to talk all things football for the weekend. Rafael, how you doing, my friend? Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Hey, how you doing, man? all right, well, let's start where we always start, and that's the Tennessee Volunteers. They host the South Carolina Gamecocks. Certainly a lot of coaching turmoil, quarterback turmoil. How is it that you see this one playing out? Vol's a slight favorite.
I mean, South Carolina is getting all the action right now. We're getting about 55% of it coming in on South Carolina, just because I think what's going on in Tennessee, I mean, I think we can all agree that you're probably going to have a new head coach for next year's Tennessee team. They've only covered two of their last seven SEC games, and I think that's why the public is betting all over South Carolina. I just don't think they realize that they don't think Tennessee can pull out a victory. The road team in this series is also 14-5 against the spread. I think we're going to have a lot of action continue to pile in on South Carolina. I just can't put my money on Tennessee right now. I think this university and the football team is a little shambles. And just knowing that they know that they're probably going to have a new head coach, what's their motivation to come out and win games now? I like South Carolina, but again, these players have pride and they want to win games. So I'm probably going to throw this aside, but if I had to put my hard-earned money, I mean, you have to look at South Carolina right there just because of what's going on at Tennessee right now.
Vanderbilt locally here heads down to Oxford to take on Ole Miss and sort of a really critical game after a really tough stretch for them. They have to get the offense going and they have to face an Ole Miss team that's got a good quarterback on the road. How does this one play out?
Yeah, we're getting a lot of Ole Miss action right here, but I'm leaning towards the Vanderbilt head. I think they'll finally get both sides of the ball some better play today, and I still like Vandy's defense over Ole Miss's defense. I know Vanderbilt has had trouble covering this, but they're only covering two other last six games. But I think I thought this number was a tad high. I thought it was going to be like around two-ish, but getting 3.5, I think whoever wins this game, maybe by a field goal, maybe even less by a field goal, I think it's going to be a tight game. Granted, last year Vanderbilt won 38-17. Both the last three meetings have not been close at all, but I think this one's going to be a close one. I'm leaning towards Vanderbilt taking that plus 3.5.
Rafael Esparza from MyBookie.net takes Vanderbilt and takes South Carolina so far. Give me your deep dive lock of the week in college football this weekend.
Well, I'm going to go outside the box, and I'm going to take the Marshall Thundering Herd just because of what they have done lately against Old Dominion. Old Dominion beat them last year, but all of a sudden Marshall has just been pulled out some huge wins, some big numbers, and being some really good opponents while Old Dominion has struggled on offense and giving up tons of points. They've only they lost last week 58-28 to FAU, but then they went to Virginia Tech and scored the big goose egg. They lost by double digits their three straight meetings, and Marshall's defense has been really good, holding Charlotte to only 3 points and Kent to 0 points. So I think Marshall, I know this is not a big school, not a power five, but you want to make some money, I say grab Marshall minus 13.5 before it jumps all the way up to 14. I think they have an easy win at home against Old Dominion. And yes, Old Dominion does have football. It's not just a basketball school.
Let's look at the Tennessee Titans move to the NFL. I like that deep dive, by the way, with Marshall there. We move to the NFL, and it's not till Monday night. Do you expect a lot of movement on this game? And is it just impossible to pick without the quarterback situation being a known deal?
Yeah, I do see. I mean, we're probably just going to get flooded of Tennessee money. That's why we haven't really. Normally, we would put out, I hate to use the word, a dummy number just to see what the public is going to bet right away so we can adjust it throughout the week. But we didn't just because we know we're just going to get flooded of Tennessee money just because of what the Colts are. I think the bettors, and including ourselves, don't think that Andrew Luck's going to play all season long. So they would jump all over Tennessee like there's no tomorrow. That's why we have not put any kind of number. I see Tennessee money coming in. I see Tennessee winning easily. I think they should have no problem winning this game against a Colts team that their offense has been struggling. Granted, their defense has played really well in holding teams, and I know they're coming off, I hate to use the word a big win against the 49ers, but they did win 26-23. But I think Tennessee coming out of this game after back-to-back road losses and still mad at how badly they lost to Houston 57-14. They won their last home game beating the Seahawks. I think that's why we haven't put nothing up, because I think Tennessee easily puts the beat down on Indianapolis on Monday night.
All right, your top lock, top pick, top bet in the NFL this weekend.
Ooh, there's a lot of them. I'm going to take a double. Here's another big double. I'm going to take the Atlanta Falcons against Miami, just because if you look at this, the bettors are going to see, they're not going to see Atlanta versus Miami. They're going to see Matt Ryan versus Jay Cutler. And if that's the case, I'm taking Matt Ryan 7 days a week, twice on Sunday, and probably twice more after halftime, because Jay Cutler, I want no part of him. They have scored only 22 points in three games. And we all know Atlanta can score at home. Just ask the Green Bay Packers when they threw up 34. Atlanta's coming off of a home loss that they had to stew over that after a bye week. They had to listen about how bad they lost against Buffalo at home. I think Miami's going to be in a world of pain. I think Atlanta puts the pressure on them and wins easily by three touchdowns.
Rafael Esparza, mybookie.net is the website. Rafael, thanks a lot, man. Always appreciate it. Have another good weekend, buddy.
Take it easy. You guys too.
Absolutely. Rafael Esparza there. He likes South Carolina plus the points, Vanderbilt plus the points, the Marshall Thundering Herd minus 14, it looks like. He's taking the Tennessee Titans, and he's taking the Falcons laying the points as well. So there are the picks from Rafael Esparza, mybookie.net as well. Chase McCabe back on the program here with us, buddy. All right, so is there somebody online, Julian? Do we need to go?
We have a special guest who'd like to weigh in on the Pittsburgh Trolls.
Okay, Pittsburgh Trolls on line one. What's going on, caller?
Hey, caller, how are you guys?
Sean Henry, everybody. How are you, sir?
Hello, Sean.
Well, I'm all right, but first I need to talk as a Yankee fan. I'm a proud Yankee fan. I love the fact that we're winning in our rebuilding year, but have either one of you guys ever heard me use the term 27?
That's a good point. I don't think you have. It's all my other Yankee friends.
Let me tell you why, because I'm not insecure about our win.
That a boy.
You know, when you're talking about, you know, I'm not saying this as a proud Yankee fan, but it's a fact. The Yankees are the greatest baseball team in history, period. Doesn't matter how or why, but they are. People that are insecure about their win want to tear down the person they beat for some weird, you know, strange reason. I love that I'm a bad loser, but a bad winner is a bad person, right?
Yeah. No, I mean, I agree. It's a lot worse to be a bad winner than a bad loser, right?
Yeah. I mean, you show me a good loser, I'll show you a loser. But people should enjoy their win, but I will say this. I don't know of any franchise, without exception, that when they raise their first banner, whether it be for a division, a pennant, or a conference championship, they either raise the banner or have a ceremony to unveil it. But once you win one, then the next one, the only one that you really do a ceremony for is the championship, normally. But baseball gives out championship rings for the runner-up.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, and they have celebrations when they win the division.
And they have division pennants, and there's like 42 divisions.
Yeah, I mean, we make special goggles. I was embarrassed to see my Yankees celebrating the wild card win with, I mean, specially made goggles so they don't get sprayed in the face. But I'm not here to knock Pittsburgh. I've been curious about why they're so obsessed with us since the moment the series started, 3 months after their incredible win, back-to-back championships, first time it's been done in 20 years. They're going for, you know, a three-peat, you know, that has only happened, what, four times in our league history. They are a great organization, and I would trade places with them in a moment. For the record, I just wouldn't trade fan bases, and I think that's why they're envious. I think that's why Chicago was so obsessed with us a few years ago, when they were making fun of our sellout streak. You know, it was only 8 games, then it was 20 games. Well, now it's 61 games. I don't think we're going to hear that being made fun of any longer. So I want to worry about it. Let's just enjoy what we do, because you know what? We do the celebration and the fun better than anyone. I just wish we did the hockey better than anyone, and that's the goal this year, right?
That's the next step. I mean, listen, I'm with you. Don't take the bait is sort of our message. Don't stoop.
Yeah, I feel better. You know? Sean has made me feel better.
You know, when I sit next to a Blackhawks fan, I love them. I mean, they're passionate. They travel. They have great history. And I love sitting next to the ones that actually know the full history, because it's pretty cool. And the ones that only know about the three cups, like Chase said, they're still fun. You know, they still love the team. And I think that's neat, too. I don't even make fun of them for not knowing they won six, or that which Esposito won a cup? Because not one of them knows that answer. But so what? I mean, they're still fans and they're having fun, and that's what makes it really cool. Why do they turn to me and give me the knock-knock joke? You know, I went to a Predator's house for a party, couldn't get a drink. You know why? No cups. I mean, it's funny, but at some point, it's like, just enjoy, you know, your success, right?
No, I agree. It's funny. I walked out of the Bridgestone Arena like a Saturday, I think a couple of Saturdays ago, and there were like four or five Blackhawks fans all posing in front of the big Smashville banner. And all four of them, all four of them walk by, and they're all smiling, and they're just having a great time in our city. And I had a Pred shirt on, so I kind of like I walked by and like pointed to the logo, and all four of them just started laughing, and like that's just healthy. Right. That's just healthy, good sports sort of like fan interaction there.
Yeah, that's cool, and that's what sports are about. It's so much fun going to another city and not getting into some goofy argument about whose fans are bigger, better, louder, whether we're pumping music in or not, noise in. It's I've never been to a bad hockey city, and that's the one. Cool in their own way. We know ours is better. Everyone knows ours is better, by a matter of fact. But it doesn't make the other ones not great, right?
Right.
No.
But I think it goes down to, and this is not political, but, you know, we had an election last November, if you recall. For some reason, people keep talking about the results, and I don't know why either. You know, when you win, you win, and you don't have to worry about how you won. I hate when people say, you know, Tuesday night, that was an ugly win. No, there is no ugly when you use the term win. There's nothing but,
yep.
You know, Miss America wins, right?
Yep. No, I agree. And
I agree, too.
And there's no reason to talk about New
Hampshire.
Yeah,
we
Sean,
all
agree,
now, boys.
I feel
Sean,
better.
Sean Henry, everybody. Thank
hey, I want Chase. Chase gives predictions on Chicago, not you anymore.
Okay. I think they're playing with house money. I think it's a great game. It's an opportunity.
Well, hey. They're all opportunities. You've got 82 of them a year, and you got to make sure you win more than you lose, and you got to win in your division, right?
Yep.
Last
big
I checked,
game, big game from the Titans.
Hey, Sean, we appreciate it, man. Always a pleasure. Go Mets.
27, boys. 27.
Oh, there it is. He
when
finally,
you say go Mets, he's supposed to hang up so he doesn't get a response.
He finally, no, I allowed the 27. I knew he was going to go 27 on me there.
If you knew he was going to say that, why would you allow him?
Because it's okay. Because I'm fine with it. I don't care. I know where the Mets are located. I like being the lovable loser. And then when we do win, when the Mets win, the city changes and it becomes a National League town because New York is a National League town. And I've had that discussion with Sean many times. And
Willie Donick would agree with you.
Exactly. I'm on home turf here. I'm on home field advantage. I'm in my studio, so I can do that. No, it's funny. Like it's. I walked by those four Blackhawk fans. They're all taking pictures in front of Bridgestone, and I thought it's a lot easier to just point at the logo and not have to say anything because you swept them last series. It's a lot easier to be more jovial with the team because like I walk by a Pittsburgh fan, and I'm kind of like, but like you know what? We're cool. Nashville lets everybody in. We're very welcoming, having a good time. So Jordan Rogers is going to join us coming up in just a few minutes when we get back. I do want to remind everybody, though, however, to join the Game Nashville to walk to end cancer. Visit us at thegamenashville.com and click on Light the Night or visit lightthenight.org/TN. Activities include a kid zone, cornhole, face painting, balloon artists, and a lot more. Live performances on stage by Bravetown, inspiring and uplifting lighting of the lantern ceremony. The grand finale fireworks spectacular is going to be there as well. To donate, text Cure Nashville to 91999. Jordan Rogers, when we come back, Brandon Fitz, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Brandon Fitz, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Jordan Rogers joining us here from the SEC Network and ESPN. Always a pleasure talking to you, Jordan. How are you, my friend?
Well, what's going on, Braden? Appreciate it.
Well, let me ask you first about the Butch Jones situation. We'll just get the obligatory Butch question out of the way. Is there something that can happen this weekend in this game against South Carolina that means he might not be employed Sunday or Monday morning?
I mean, absolutely. I mean, I don't see how you can't look at the product on the field and start to question that. Not that they may or may not pull the trigger if South Carolina does come in there and drug them. I don't think that's going to be the case. I think South Carolina can win this game by two touchdowns. I don't think it's going to be embarrassing. But then again, that's going to hinge a lot on Jared Garantano and what this offense can actually muster with a quarterback change. So, you know, there's one thing to keep in mind. Players get coaches fired. And if the product on the field not only shows a score differential that's unacceptable, as we've seen in the recent past couple games, but if you see players stopping or not playing for a coach anymore, that's when you really start to question the merit of leaving someone in a job.
Take us through the quarterback situation. Obviously, we know that when you don't win a job, quarterbacks tend to transfer. But I have no problem with that, Jordan. I have no problem with players wanting to transfer to find out what's best for them in their situation. But I also sort of have this weird, slimy feeling about a guy being told he's not a starter and then quitting immediately. That feels weird, too. So take fans into the locker room. What is that process like for both Quentin Dormady and Jarrett Garitano? And what can we see out of him this weekend?
You know, it's somewhat uncomfortable. It really is. And I've been on both sides of it. I've been on the, versus Georgia my junior year in 2011. We didn't know who the starter was going to be until 11 o'clock the night before. Meetings got over, an entire week of preparation, and that's when coach told us. So whether you have time to prepare or you don't have time to prepare, it's the onus of responsibility is on Jarrett Garitano and his development in the reps that he has received. Now, I don't think it bodes well that the decision is just being made now. I think if they thought he was ready, if there was a chance that he was playing even anywhere near to the standard that Dormady has showed on the field, that we would have seen him earlier. Now, you have a bye week, so it's a good time to make the transition because you allow the entire team to be comfortable with it. There's no question marks. Garantano is able to get more reps with the starters in a week where you're narrowing in your preparation for the specific team that you're playing. So it's a good time as any to do it. But the problem with the quarterback situation is not entirely on the shoulders of the quarterback. If you look at the play of the offensive line, now the stat column doesn't show that they're giving up an abnormal amount of sacks or pressures. In fact, they're actually pretty good to that standard. But the frequency to which the pocket closes, the frequency to which the quarterback is forced to move platforms and complete balls is very, very high. And those may not be counted as pressures or sacks or anything in the stat column, but when you flip on the film and actually watch it diligently, that's what you're seeing. And when you have a young quarterback in a situation where he's got to move, he's got to reset, and let alone go through progressions that he's not used to in a game environment, that worries me. So, yes, Quentin Dormady played way below the standard of what's needed. A lot of that is on his shoulders. A lot of that is on the shoulders around him. But you should see a heavy dose of John Kelly this week, and hopefully Garantano shows some progressions of being able to push the ball downfield, something they haven't been able to do at all.
Jordan Rogers joining us here, SEC Network, ESPN. Vanderbilt goes down to Ole Miss. This is a tough spot for Derek Mason's club just because Ole Miss has got a lot of questions and problems as well, but you're coming off a four-game stretch where you're just sort of like physically beaten up at this point. They played well against this team last year, but this is sort of a critical moment, springboard moment for Vanderbilt when you look at the rest of the season. A lot of winnable games. I just don't know what to make of the running games and the defense and the offensive line. I don't know what to make of this game at all.
Yeah, you know, it's a weird one. And here's where I sit with Vandy. There was so much positivity around how they finished the year last year with developing the offense, Shermer's progression. And then early on this year, they started out 3-0, and we set that bar as a society, as fans, as the media, extremely high for a team that hadn't been able to run the ball. Even in those three victories, Ralph Webb was averaging around 50 yards a game, which is, by the volume of how they give him the ball, is not acceptable. Shermer was brilliant and sufficient and efficient at what he was doing. But I almost wonder if the bar we set led us kind of up for this letdown of realizing that they haven't taken the steps as we thought they had. They're not physical enough at the point of attack on both sides of the ball, and you're seeing that in them, the inability to run the football, and you're seeing that in how many yards they're giving up with a defense that is usually very stout and very schematically sound. So this is an interesting matchup because you go against a team that is struggling, and Ole Miss is struggling in stopping the run. That's evident. If Vandy can get their run game going, that's what they need. But on the other side of the ball, that team has talent. Shea Patterson is a talented young quarterback. The receivers they have, A.J. Brown, DeMarcus Lodge, D.K. Metcalf, they're some of the best in the SEC. Vanderbilt doesn't have guys to match up with those. So if consistently Shea Patterson is able to extend plays and find those guys downfield, this could be a long day if they're not able to establish the run and control on Vanderbilt's offensive side.
The Florida Gators, a team that may be trending in the wrong direction. Texas A&M, despite losing, maybe looks like they're headed in the right direction. Are you seeing a team that's rallying around its coach and Kevin Sumlin for Texas A&M, and do you think they have a shot to go into the Swamp and win?
Yeah, absolutely. I think these guys are playing hard for Kevin Sumlin, and whatever you think about him on the outside, he's obviously doing something right inside that locker room. But more importantly, I think they're developing an offense very effectively around Kellen Mond and his development as a quarterback. If he started the first game of the year, that was a Nick Foles game plan that Mond was forced into against UCLA, and you saw it. He was 3-17. He was not efficient. Didn't know what he was doing, let alone he's a true freshman. His eyes are pretty wide on the road on the West Coast. You've seen them take steps to spread the formations out more, get things spaced out in front of Mond. He doesn't have to think as much pre-snap, so he can go split field read, look at just one side of the field or one or two receivers, utilize him running the football, utilize his legs. The running game has been solid. These guys are playing hard for Kevin Sumlin, and they're going in to a Florida game where I don't think Florida is even as good as some of the scores that we've seen. I don't think they're better than Kentucky. They aren't. They aren't a better team than Kentucky. So I think Texas A&M has a chance to win this game and possibly win this game handily.
You talked about Kentucky just being better, and certainly all these teams, a lot of these teams at least, still have to play each other. Tennessee, Vanderbilt, South Carolina, Kentucky, there's still a lot of round robin going on. Who do you like at the end of the year to be the best team out of that group?
Out of that group, taking Georgia out of it? I mean, it's got to be Kentucky right now. Even though it's not sexy, you're not seeing the flashes. You know, they put up over 30 points last week, but still that offense doesn't seem to have any explosiveness that you're going to be like, yes, no matter what defense, this guy is going to have a day. But the defense is playing stout. They're playing well. They're stopping the run as much as possible, even though Missouri found some holes in that game last week. What's most important about that squad, though, is what we've seen out of Kentucky and their inability to win games as October and November roll around. They're finding ways to finish out games. They're finding ways to fight through adversity, and I think that bodes well for any game that they're in, especially against kind of that second tier of the SEC when you take Georgia out of the mix.
Jordan Rogers, SEC Network and ESPN, always a pleasure, man. Love talking with you. Thanks for giving us a few minutes of your time, and we'll be paying attention this weekend, obviously.
Thanks, Braden. And it's too bad that Fitz is too big-time for us now.
Well, hey, listen, he was upset with you because you big-timed him down at SEC Media Days, and I had to listen to him.
Oh, this is just getting even.
I had to listen to him complain about it for like 3 months. And
oh, geez.
So now he's getting you back. Well, and I'm just stuck in the middle of this lover's quarrel, and I don't like it at all.
Well, we appreciate you playing referee.
Thank you. Mommy and Daddy, have a good weekend, buddy. Have a good weekend. Jordan Rogers there from the SEC Network. Always a pleasure listening to him. By the way, for the Vols watch party this weekend, coming up, of course, at Beyond the Edge in East Nashville, the Vols watch party with ESPN 102.5 The Game's me. We have a double – it's like a double stack, a double edition of the Vols watch party. It's for the entire game from 11 a.m. all the way till 4 p.m., so it's going to overlap with the Auburn and LSU game. Can't wait to see that one as well. So we got a lot of stuff planned for you guys at Beyond the Edge. That's 112 South 11th Street in East Nashville. You guys know where it is, right there off of 5 Points. The Vols take on South Carolina, and we'll be there. We got drink specials, Pickers Vodka, New Heights Beer, all that good stuff, so come hang out with us as well. Julian, do you have something you need to celebrate when we come back? All right, I just hold it. You've been screaming at me for 30 minutes, so we're going to do that. I will let you scream about something when we come back right here on Braden and Fitz, ESPN 102.5 The Game. I am going to give you my silly underdog picks in a moment. Braden and Fitz, ESPN 102.5 The Game, and you'll also hear from Ryan Johansson. But, Julian, you have some news for college basketball fans out there?
Oh, man.
This is the most I've seen him smile ever.
And it's hard to make him smile.
Oh, give me a sec. I'm sorry.
We had all commercial break.
We have all the
time
to
compose himself. Yeah, we're just going to sit here and wait, Julian.
Okay, well, I know a lot of you.
Why don't you explain why corrupt officials for apparel companies has saved your university's bacon?
Oh, whatever. Feel that way if you want. The NCAA tried to step into something that was not what they are meant to govern, and they lost. So, you know, whatever. I don't care. Seven-time
undefeated
champs.
So what happened? Tell everybody what happened.
You tell them. I don't have to tell them.
I don't actually know. I haven't looked at it because I don't care.
Well, today was the final ruling on the NCAA case over alleged academic fraud.
Finally.
And the NCAA came out with this statement saying, while student-athletes likely benefited from the courses, which are those sham courses in the Afro-African-American studies at the University of North Carolina, so did the general student body, which is true. Additionally, the record did not establish that the university created and offered the courses as part of a systemic effort to benefit only student-athletes, which is also true. So for all of you fans I know up there, up north in Kentucky, Luke May. Ooh. The ceiling is still the roof, and no, we will not have any banners coming down.
Oh, man, the condescension with which he talks about North Carolina basketball.
Oh, it's by the way, tonight is Late Night with Roy. Well, they will be lifting their seventh national championship banner.
And probably his best coaching job, frankly, this particular team. Really good job by him. And
yeah, he's such an overrated coach, though.
Listen, the NCAA, this took like 3.5 decades to figure out, and it's kind of the NCAA is just – I don't think it's a joke, but they just –
I do.
There's just no way for them to police all this stuff anymore. Like I went to a big state U school, and I absolutely knew which classes I could take if I wanted to get an easy A. Like, it's not some made up thing. We didn't make it up. And
well, I think every college kid,
right?
Knows that.
Like, everybody knows that. So it is what it is. I do think that this. I actually think, and this maybe is just the cynic in me, but the very first thing I thought when I saw that they announced yesterday, I saw it on the scroll on the bottom line on ESPN that they were going to announce the findings today for North Carolina and this academic investigation. And what's interesting is my first thought was they had to rush to get the results in finally because of all the stuff that's happening with Adidas and Nike and the pay and the federal investigation and all this stuff. The rumors behind closed doors that are sort of off record about this federal investigation and things I've been telling you guys for years, like, it is going to be a massive investigation. There will be more information that comes out, and this is the federal one I'm talking about with Adidas and potentially Nike. There's only the tip of the iceberg that's been revealed, and it is going to be a lot of stuff. And when you start listening to rumors and you're going, you think, what's going to happen? Widespread stuff, just huge, potentially far-reaching impacts on college basketball. And this strikes me as the NCAA finally realizing, well, we've got a whole nother big, massive monstrosity we've got to handle. We need to be done with this nonsense that we've been dealing with North Carolina forever, because it's been like, well, how long has it been, Julian? Like 8 years or something they've been dealing with this? It's so ridiculous how long the NCAA takes. And frankly, the whole Miami investigation into Nevin Shapiro took – They totally botched it by hiring people they shouldn't have hired.
Yeah, it's been 7 years. Like, it's just, also, they finished with the whole response to notice of allegations like a couple months ago. So regardless of whether this college basketball stuff would have hit, your theory would be wrong because they were going to be done with this regardless.
Well, it's just the cynic in me, and it's just
it's a working theory.
It's just a – yeah.
I mean, you can be cynical, but you're wrong. I mean, it's going to be resolved regardless of if this Adidas apparel stuff happened.
I don't know. 7 years.
Yeah, 7 years. I mean, yeah, 7 years. It finally wraps up. You, of course.
Finally. So, North Carolina off the hook. It looks like from all the reports there.
Well, good for them.
Yeah, good for them. All right. So, college football coming up this weekend. We're gonna get to Ryan Johansson coming up in just a few minutes, but I want to get some picks here. I have been torn on South Carolina and Tennessee the entire week. I think Tennessee's the better team. I think they're more talented. They're at home. They're 16-2 all time at home against South Carolina. They don't lose at home to this team, but this has been a very close game the last few years. I'm trying to come up with a way to spin this into a positive for Tennessee, and I just can't find it. Unless Jarrett Garantano, the light bulb just goes on for him, and they find something in the running game, and they run the ball 65 times, I'm finding it's hard for me to find ways that Tennessee wins the game. So.
Yeah, I can't really find too many ways, especially how they play lately. I think that it's Garantano. That's the biggest wild card in this entire equation, and I think you just said it best. If he's what they think he can be or everybody thinks he can be, then maybe they rally around him and find a way to win at home, but I don't believe it. I don't believe it's going to happen.
I'll take South Carolina there, and I don't know what that means for Monday morning show, if we've got a coach to talk about or not. It'll be very interesting to see what it looks like.
I've actually wanted to have this discussion with you because I respect your opinion in college football.
Go on.
And I know you follow the University of Tennessee. If they make a change mid-year, is it safe to say Brady Hoke would be the interim?
Yeah, probably. I mean, Bob Stoops has been a former head coach. Larry Scott was an interim head coach at one point. They've got a lot of options.
But he's the assistant head coach.
Yeah, I mean,
he's
the only guy who's been a big-time head football coach. Right. I mean, Bob Stoops was at Columbia, and Larry Scott was an interim, and they've got some good recruiters on that staff that I think maybe you could toy with the idea of making. Brady Hoke is the logical choice that has always been the name that they would elevate. And I, you know, obviously I'm a little – I worked with Brady for a year when he took a year off, and – he knows how to be a head coach. I don't think that, you know, rejuvenates the locker room or fixes the infighting or makes them better on the offensive line or whatever. It just sort of all it does for Tennessee fans is just sort of say, all right, here's the official move. We've made the move, and now you guys get ready for maybe hiring Derek Dooley, maybe hiring another Butch Jones, maybe hiring Kirby Smart. We just have no idea. Like, I like Jeff Brohm a lot. I don't know if he's a championship-level coach in the SEC. There are no proven commodities in college football, and those three guys aren't taking your phone calls. Chip Kelly is the only name that's out there that I think would even be conceivable to get. And then you could have two working coaching staffs, which is a perfect situation for Tennessee. I just don't think he wants to coach in the SEC. I think he's looking at a job like UCLA that could come open, or Arizona State could come open, and I think he wants to be on the West Coast, and I think that's what he does well. Bob Stoops is a great option. I would fire Butch Jones today for Bob Stoops, but I think
Do you believe he's retired?
No, not at all. I think he'll come back and coach, but I think he wants the Notre Dame job. Unfortunately, Brian Kelly's doing a good job, and Notre Dame's going to be good this year, and that's why.
Gives you that inclination?
What?
That he wants a Notre Dame job.
So it's his whole family is diehard Notre Dame fans. He grew up in a Notre Dame household. His dad was a huge Notre Dame fan. His brothers are all huge Notre Dame fans.
Why would he leave Oklahoma to go coach Notre Dame?
I think he wanted a year off, and Brian Kelly was squarely on the hot seat. And because Notre Dame is his, again, it's whatever makes you tick. Why would Urban Meyer leave Florida?
I think it's been time for him to leave anyway.
Probably so. Why would you leave the Florida job ever for anything? I mean, that makes no sense. And Urban Meyer did it for a year to go take the Ohio State job because that's what's in his blood. And Notre Dame is in Bob Stoops' blood. He doesn't hide from it. It's always been in his family's household. They grew up a Notre Dame household, and he's always wanted that job. And it's the problem is I don't think it's going to be open because I think Notre Dame's actually pretty good this year. And I think we're going to learn that Georgia win was a really good win by the end of the season. So, by the way, my underdog picks for the weekend, Chase, as I'm trying to take down 3D every single weekend, by the way, don't forget to make your silly underdog picks brought to you by Volunteer Hose and Gasket. Pick three college underdog teams you think will win before the weekend of college football. To sign up and make your picks, visit thegamenational.com. I'm taking Maryland against Northwestern. I think I like the Terps there. I think Northwestern's been a little disappointing, so I'm taking a risk there. Only a couple, like 5 or 6 points on that one. I like Georgia Tech at Miami. I think that's a sneaky good option there. I think Miami
– Plaz took that yesterday.
Okay, I don't like it now. Miami could just be that good, but I think there's an emotional letdown after beating Florida State that you can't avoid here, and Georgia Tech is a team that takes advantage of those types of situations. Mm-hmm. So I like Georgia Tech, and I'm taking A&M at Florida as a six-point dog. I think A&M's going to win the game.
That's who Derek took.
See? Great minds. Great minds think alike. So check it out there at GameNashville.com, of course. Gale is, I think, 200 – where am I at? I'm 218th out of 1,000 or so. So I was
you
up
got
to
work
like,
to do.
I was up to like 110, and now I'm down to like 218.
I'm waiting for the day for Willie Donick to do the review and announce Gale as the weekly winner, so I can laugh.
Gale had Texas beaten USC.
Oh wow!
Which was an overtime.
Yeah,
I won that week.
And Texas should have won that game.
And I would have had to obviously step away from the prize and give it to the second place winner. But it would have been fun for Willie to announce Gale.
It would have been hilarious.
That's the champion. Ryan Johansson, you'll hear from the Preds star centerman after the big win over Dallas last night. Chase had a chance to catch up with him, so you'll hear that when we come back. Brandon Fitz, ESPN 102.5. The
How do I say goodbye to what we had?
The good. Brandon Fitz, ESPN 102.5 The Game. That music means it is our final segment this week. Fitzy will be back at some point in the city of Nashville, right, Julian? Like, he'll be back next week?
I think he'll be back, like, today.
Probably. Obviously, Monday morning, we'll have a huge preview of the Monday night game, Titans and Colts, coming up for you. Also, by the way, the mayor has called and apologized to not only Braden and Fitz in ESPN 102.5 The Game, but also the people of Nashville. She was very busy this morning. She will be joining us on Monday morning. So we'll just continue to promote that and promise that until she shows up. I will guilt trip you, Mayor, into coming on the show. I have no problem with that. Also want to remind you, make your picks for our Pro Football Pick'em Contest. You have a chance to win awesome prizes, including a trip for two to Hawaii. That's pretty cool. Brought to you by Computer and Communications Innovations in Nashville. Sign up and pick now at thegamenashville.com. About to hear from Ryan Johansson hanging out here at the Game Studios and Wholesale, presented by Wholesale Inc. at Mount Juliet, of course, and Chase McCabe, who's hanging out with us here for a few minutes before 3D begins. We do appreciate that, Chase. You had an opportunity to catch up with Ryan Johansson last night following a win, 4-1 W over the Stars. Obviously, a big one against Chicago. Here is Chase McCabe talking with Preds center Ryan Johansson.
I'm here with Ryan Johansson after the Predators' 4-1 win over the Dallas Stars. And let's start with the first period. Obviously, you guys down 1-0. What was the conversation like in that first intermission to come out and have a completely different second?
Yeah, obviously it wasn't a start we would have liked. So obviously we just had to adjust a little bit and get our team game going a little bit more. And once we did that, we took over and we controlled the rest of the game.
Do you feel like that was important, especially first matchup against a Central Division opponent? A lot's been made about the offense of the Dallas Stars. You guys come out and show your offensive prowess there in the second and the third.
Yeah, it's always fun playing those guys. They're always a tough matchup, and obviously being in the division, it's a big 2 points. And we're happy with the result we got tonight and the way we're taking steps in the right direction.
You're a veteran on this team, and I know he's standing right next to you, but how impressive have you been with Sam Girard? First two games, he gets his first goal tonight. It's been fun to watch.
Yeah, no, he's been fun to watch for us, too. He's going out there, and he's playing his game, and he's having confidence within his abilities, and then his talent's just taking over. So, for him and moving forward, he's just got to keep being himself, keep believing in himself, and using his creativity and his poise, and he's making a difference on our back end right now.
How about the play of Phil right now with this first line? Obviously, you center him, but he has really turned it on in the early going of this season.
Yeah, I know. He last couple of years, he hasn't had starts that he would have liked, so it's awesome to see him having a scoring touch right now. And the way he's winning his one-on-one battles and competing on pucks and stuff, he's been fun to play with and start with here. We're going to keep trying to get him the puck in those scoring areas.
I know you guys take it one game at a time. This one's in the books. You know what's coming up Saturday against Chicago. What are you guys expecting going into their barn for the first time since the playoffs?
Yep, they've had a good start to the year. They've brought some old faces back in, and they're a hungry team, and they're always a tough opponent. And I'm sure they're not happy the way they went out against us last year. So we'll enjoy this one here for a little bit, and then we'll shift our focus to them and making sure we prepare ourselves for a tough game there.
Awesome. Hey, appreciate it as always. Thanks.
Ryan Johansson there following the big W over the Stars last night. And one of the things, Chase, that stood out to me, we'll get to the Chicago game in just a second, but one of the things that stood out to me so far, and I noticed this, I think, through two games, and then I noticed it even more after Tuesday and then certainly last night, PK Subban, Philip Forsberg, no acclimation time needed for those two. They are playing like they're two of the best three or four players on the team. If they're not already the most talented players on the team, they are playing like it right now, and that is a good sign for this Predators organization moving forward.
Yeah, and I was expecting that, to be honest with you. I was expecting PK Subban to really be PK Subban, because obviously you had last year, he had the injury. He was coming to a new team. You had to have some chemistry start to develop. You don't have all that now. And so it doesn't surprise me that Philip Forsberg and PK Subban are tied for points on the team. Ryan Johansson has 4. Obviously, he's centering that top line and making a difference as well. So it goes back to what we always say, Braden. The Stars have to play like the Stars. And I'm not talking about the team. I'm talking about the Stars of the Nashville Predators. They have to play like the Stars, and right now they are.
Yeah, and Pekka, I think, last night played very well.
Pekka had a great game.
Kept them in game one, frankly, against Boston. He just gave him a shot to win that game. So, I mean, Pekka has had – he certainly wasn't great on Tuesday night, but the whole team kind of had some lulls on Tuesday night against Philly, and that was an emotional night. I thought that by far the most complete game of the season so far last night, even though the first period wasn't all that great. But you look ahead to Chicago, and I kind of feel like there's a little bit of house money here, because I think – this is a really tough situation to walk into, I think, for Nashville,
right,
against a really hot team, extraordinarily talented, the first-place division team from last year. You beat them 4-0 in the series last season in the postseason. You know they're angry about that. This strikes me as a buzzsaw situation. So anything that comes out of this, if you can steal a point, I feel like you're playing with house money if you're the Predators. I am nervous about tomorrow evening if I'm a Predators fan.
I'm not. to be honest with you. And I understand why you say that, but I'm not, because the playoffs won, but this team plays them tough now, and I don't think they're scared of them anymore. And so you have a lot of the same guys back with Nashville, and you have some familiar faces with Chicago, but again, you got to rebuild chemistry that was there a few years ago. So I think this is a good opportunity for the Preds to go in and get 2 points tomorrow night against a very good Chicago team.
Is that what you're calling? I mean,
yeah,
is that your
prediction?
Is 2 points?
I'm calling it. 2 points for the Preds.
So 80 and 2 this year is your prediction for the Preds?
I didn't say that. I said 2 points tomorrow night.
Okay.
What?
Sounds like a homer pick. That's all.
Well, it's not. I think the Preds are going to go in and win tomorrow night.
Well, if it's a speed game like it was in the first round of the postseason last year, then they should be in good shape. Pekka certainly was outstanding last year in that series as well. But it'll be interesting to see what happens. I just think it's a tough situation. I think Chicago.
Oh, no doubt. It's a tough situation.
They're playing extremely well, and I know that they finally, and Hal Gill pointed this out earlier on the program, people look at this team differently now that they are Western Conference champions. There's a different feel and a different vibe when the Predators show up in your building, and certainly Chicago. You know, you couldn't call it a true rivalry because they had never really beaten Chicago in any meaningful situation.
Right.
Well, that's not the case anymore. You can look at that and say, well, they took care of business in the most important of all situations, and Chicago has to sit up in their chair a little bit taller, a little bit straighter, and say, all right, we acknowledge what you're doing down there, and it's time to go. I think we got to. A really good regular season in the division, mostly because the division's really good. But it's going to be a battle, I think, every single night. And it starts tomorrow night, of course, coverage right here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. So.
Absolutely.
What do you guys got coming up real quickly here on the program, 3D coming up?
We got a lot of good stuff, obviously. We're going to preview South Carolina and Tennessee with Phil Kornblatt. He's been doing radio in South Carolina for a long time, so he's going to join us at 10:25. Cameron Wolf from ESPN is going to come on with us and talk Titans, Colts. You just made the list. If you need to vent, if you ever need to vent, you just call in and put somebody on your list. And
I'll
then Kevin Allen, USA Today, we'll talk some hockey with him. And then pick six to end the 1 o'clock hour.
Can I put a city on the list?
Sure.
Nope.
People do it all the time.
Nope, not doing it. Not stooping to their level. Not going to do it. Chase McCabe, of course, great producer, host, hanging out, extraordinaire of all different millions of things here on the channel. For Julian Council, hanging out. Fitzy will be back. We got the mayor on Monday. We promised this time. My name is Braden Gall. Follow me on Twitter @BradenGall. Thanks for listening, everybody. And as Fitzy always says, we don't have any idea what you're doing on 3D, but it'll be better than what we just did. Have a great weekend, everybody. It's so hard.